Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. Today, our speaker is Brenda.
Good evening, everybody. And I just want to take, before I start, I want to just take 1 minute to acknowledge that this evening, Vladimir Putin began a military operation in Ukraine a few minutes ago. And, so it's really especially wonderful to share with everybody, this practice of peace at this difficult time in the world. A lot has happened for me in the last week and a half, and it's got me thinking. A good friend of mine passed away suddenly. It struck me that many of the events in our life are just like that. They are not self-generated. We did not ask for them. Like, we did not ask for this war that just started. Like, we did not ask for this pandemic. But here they are, after all. Not asking our permission, not giving us advance notice, just appearing, seemingly out of nowhere. And many times, once we turn our attention directly to the new events, we find out that, in fact, there were some pre-existing facts and stories that point to this new development, but that we were simply unaware of. It was outside of the sphere of our own consciousness. And as I sat a few mornings later, I wondered how much else is outside of my consciousness, waiting to materialize around the corner. How much do we ever really know of the world around us? Precious little, I'm afraid. We barely know our own minds and psyches. Even after a great deal of effort spent in meditation and study, we can be surprised by what we say or do in times of stress or excessive fatigue. Really? I did that? Maybe I'm the only one who has asked myself these questions. Perhaps we might learn a little patience and perhaps a little understanding that this is so, so that when we are surprised, we are not surprised, if you know what I mean. We might learn to recognize the early signs that we are starting to go outside of what is sometimes called a window of tolerance and learn to disengage or retreat, however briefly, while we connect and check in with ourselves and regroup. And in this, it is this regrouping, I think, that is at the heart of our practice. It is this returning consistently to our breath and to our practice of simply being that can help us also in our outer life. When my friend initially started, for example, in the situation with my friend, I called him around Christmas time, and he was busy. He said that he was talking with his daughter, and he didn't call me back. And we spoke briefly a little bit later, and he also seemed preoccupied. And at the time, I thought maybe he was a little bit snobby, but there's subsequently found out that he was really trying to take care of all of his affairs in the short time that he had left, that he knew he was dying. He just chose not to let anybody know. So now we realize how much was going on with him and his illness and trying to take care of his 22-year-old baby girl, trusting that eventually we will understand everything that happened. We did, and we thanked him in the aftermath when all became clear. So in our practice, is returning consistently to our breath can help us in our outer life. Something very magical happens when we do that. Inner and outer connect, and we are able to see and understand a little bit more, and are sometimes able to think and act in a more empathetic, or maybe call it loving, manner toward each other. Connecting with this place, and if possible, living from it, I think, is our main job. Some call it God, some call it Allah, Yehovah, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, or emptiness, fullness, or chi, or pure being. It doesn't really matter what you call it. It is the ground of pure being. It defies all explanation, all understanding. It can only be perceived, often briefly and partially. But we must stop, whether for a moment, day, a year, or a lifetime. Somehow we must stop. Sometimes circumstances stop us in our tracks, as happened with the death of my friend. Sometimes we are able to stop ourselves, but stop we must. And when we do, our relationship to ourselves and to each other and to the world around us changes. We no longer see it as a struggle of needing to survive. It is that, certainly. But beyond that, it is a continually unfolding and continual becoming process, always changing, always new. Perhaps it is a little like swimming. One can struggle to learn to swim in order not to sink. And that is okay. It is good not to sink. Or one can also learn to tread water and push oneself to the surface and swim, or swim enjoyably and working with and in the water. The choice is ours, and often the relationships we learn in our families to the water, to our environment, to each other, may persist until or unless we learn a new way to relate to our environment, our particular type of water. So I would suggest a small exercise. When you are perplexed by someone's attitude or actions, perhaps try taking a pause, stepping back, physically or emotionally, and asking, what might be going on here that I'm not seeing or understanding? The answers and insights might surprise you, and in the surprise and the chaos might lie new becomings and new possibilities for others and new friends. So it is not only the stepping back, but then the stepping forward that we must do. If we only step back, then we miss the opportunity. Stepping back and stepping forward. Then the circle is complete. It is like the sewing of the Buddha's robe, Rakusu or the Okesa. We recite the Namu Kebutsu, I take refuge in the Buddha. The stitch is complete when we look, put the needle in, and we take the needle out on the other side. Examining our stitching of our lives on a daily basis, we can see whether our stitches are too small, too large, too uneven, or perhaps just right. Sometimes we need to take out a few stitches and do the work again. Sometimes we have to say, it is all right as it is, even though not perfect. Sometimes when it is not perfect, it is perfect. So we should keep sewing Buddha's robe, even if we are not at all sure of ourselves. Just keep sewing. And later you can look back and decide if you will keep those stitches or if they need to be redone. It is all right. Just doing the best we can. Keep showing up the best we can for ourselves and for each other. Thank you. Does anybody have any comments or questions or stories they'd like to share? Diane?
I guess. Thank you, Brenda. I'm so sorry about your friend. And the fact that it was unexpected on your part and kind of a shock, it makes a difference when we can say goodbye to someone who's dying. But on the other hand, we're all dying, you know? And we have to remember that this might be the last time we see someone. And because of my age, some of my contemporaries and some of my relatives are in their 80s and 90s, and a couple of them are ill. And I think about, thank you for reminding me to, it is in my mind, but reaching out and how important and precious it is with each interaction with everyone, because that might be the last one. I liked your image of the sewing and just keep sewing and just keep on doing. As I've said before, I'm often kind of paralyzed and, you know, with my perfection. And so it keeps me from moving forward and just doing. So thank you for that. And you in your profession, you do deal with death. So how do you go about the mourning process? How do you say goodbye to your friend, even though he's already gone? And what will be your process for the next few days, weeks?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. Well, you know, one of my cultural heritages is the Romanian heritage. And so the Romanians have one of the things I think that's most significant is a community, you know, community coming together for someone's passing. And so the first thing that happened is like lightning fire. The news just spread across the community. Boom! Like it was instant. Within an hour, everybody knew. Everybody was calling everybody. What happened? What happened? And so that was the first thing. And that I think really helped to amortize. Is that a word? Amortize, like balance the shock, right? Because you're like, you're talking to people and you're feeling it together. And then the stories, and the stories start coming out of everybody, like, oh, now that comes into, now, yeah, we understand why he did that. And that's what happened. And that one, you know, and it all kind of piece it all together. And then of course, this crying and remembering him and just taking time to just be sad and feel it. And really feeling his loss, which I think now after most of the things have been done, it sort of really starts sinking in, you know, it's like the taking care of the jobs. And now it's kind of like, oh, I can just relax and be with it. Taking care of his daughter really helped. So a lot of us kind of focused on what does a daughter need? She okay? We spent a day at his apartment looking at pictures and telling stories, you know, having wine and just laughing and crying and telling lots of stories, you know, and being with everybody. So that helped. And I think my practice helps too, as you mentioned, like we don't know when anything, right? That's what the Buddha teaches, is you don't know when your turn will come or when some your friend's turn will come, and just being respectful of that. And I'm glad I got to talk to him before he passed away, and we did exchange a few conversations, and he said he had no regrets, that he was I didn't realize he was that close, because he didn't want me to see him in the hospital. So I tried to get a few details, but he said, no, you can't come. And now I realize, because he realized what was going on and he didn't want me to, change things, I think. That's about it. Thank you. Carolina.
I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm sure you were a really good friend. I'm sure of it.
Thank you.
When you talk about sewing, the stitches are like sewing our life. And as you know, everybody knows who's sewn a rakusu or an okesa, that in order to be able to make the stitches match every other stitch and also look good on the back, one needs to sit first. Just basic. So I add that to your metaphor.
Thank you. That's right. Yeah, it comes out, it comes from the stitch, from the sitting, doesn't it? The stitches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Les likes to. Les has told the story of me, you know, deciding to become a monk, and then I started sewing, and then I got married, and my steady stitches, my very precise and steady stitches, all of a sudden were all over the place. Philip.
Thank you for your talk. And I wanted to thank you in particular for the gentleness, the spirit of maybe the spirit of grieving permeated the announcement of the another, it feels like another ratchet in this international situation. And it's just felt so right on to, but in such a lovely, gentle way to talk about how we don't know from day to day, hour to hour, and somehow to model being in that when you've just suffered a big loss. You know, yeah. it kind of, for me, it lays it all bare. And connects up with why we're here, but not being very articulate, but I do want to thank you for being here with your presence and your talk. And
thank you. Thank you, Philip. Thank you. And yes. And, you know, losing somebody very close is always hard. It's really hard. Yeah. You know, one of the, as the community kind of comes in and sort of everybody scooped in and try to do what they could for my friend's passing and helping out and his family. One of the things I kind of thought about, it's almost like a physical healing process, you know, when there's a wound in the skin and kind of all the other cells kind of come in around and form like a scar and heal that place and shrink a little bit, you know, to kind of cover up the hole. And it's almost like the community is that. It's like a body that sort of naturally just knows just what to do if we let it, you know. Interesting. Dennis?
Thank you, Brenda. My first question was really what Diane asked, you know, how you were, you know, specifically dealing with, you know, the loss of your friend. So I appreciate your being specific about that, since we all have to deal with that from time to time. But you also started, as Philip was saying, you know, with the world situation and Putin. And sometimes when I'm, you know, aware of walking and having a nice day, I think, you know, how lucky it is that bombs aren't dropping and I'm not running from someone and no one is coming after me, or, you know, my luck in that way. And now, you know, we're hearing about what the people in Ukraine are dealing with. And while we keep hearing about what's going on there, one thing that always occurs to me is that, you know, here now with me and this moment for me, that's not happening. And it's a lovely day and a lovely evening, and we're lucky to be together and all the kind of you know, positive aspects of what we are actually experiencing right now, but knowing what is going on there, which is also happening now, but not to us directly. How do you balance those two things happening at the same time? How would you say that we are to balance those two things? What is happening with us right now, and what is happening right now to others?
Right. Well, no. I think just, you know, trying to see reality as close to what it is as we can. You know, I think being true, both of those are true, right? Holding sort of both of those realities. The reality is that, you know, the bombs aren't dropping on us right now, and we can be happy about that, even while we can also, you know, empathize and feel for the folks that they are dropping on. You know, I mean, we definitely experienced that during the pandemic, right? And we continue to experience it, like, you know, maybe our family's okay or things are okay right here, but there's other people where, no, things are not okay, right? So, and they could be pretty close. They don't have to necessarily be far away. No, I was just talking to my friend Teodora, who's the COVID specialist in Walnut Creek. And, you know, they're still losing people, mostly people who are not vaccinated, but they're losing people, and it's terrible. And it's, you know, so heartbreaking for her. So both of those things are true, you know. And I think that's all we can do, is hold both of those things in our heart.
Thank you.
Sure. May, did you want to say something?
Brenda, I still don't know how you deal with as a doctor for the past 2 years. It is a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell us something that you don't touch and you don't walk away. I know it's repeat again, 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 and then, and thank you for your stability and balance. I feel that.
Oh, you can still see some of them are still on there. Some of them survived.
How about now? How about at this very moment, there's a war, and then your friend is passing, and then if you stitch, wow. I don't have questions, I'm just so much appreciation your presence.
Thank you. Yeah, we just keep stitching. Sometimes, you know, it's a little crooked, sometimes it's a little straight, and but, you know, we look at our stitches, and we see if we can, you know, sometimes we need to take them out, sometimes, you know, we say things that we're like, let's try that one again. Let me start again. So I think, you know, I feel like sometimes, you know, in Buddhist practice, we can be a little perfectionistic, because we feel like, okay, I need to get enlightened before I help other people or I do something. And I think that, I think it's important to, that's where the community or Sangha is really important, where, you know, we realize that we're not perfect, none of us are perfect, and that we try to bring our best effort, and then that's our stitch, you know, in our Sangha, is that we do whatever contribution we can, and then go from there, and realizing that we're helping each other grow. We're helping each other learn and perfect ourselves, I suppose, and we're, you know, understand each other better. Yeah. Thank you. You want to say something more?
No, I can talk forever. anybody else has a want to share? And then
Carolina?
Yeah. Thank you for showing up and doing your talk.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Umar, you want to talk?
Hi, Brenda. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm really sorry that you lost a friend. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about how long I've known you for the past 15 years. I've seen many people come and many people go from Canando. And sometimes it's like a loss. Every time somebody leaves, it's a, like another emotional sort of death takes place, and it can be very hard. So, but the strangest thing is, I don't know why, as human beings, we sit and talk about that person who has gone or passed away. Then after they leave, then sitting and talking to them while they were in front of us, you know, these are issues that come up, you know, in families we fight, in relationships we get angry at each other, and there's problems that come up. Because a lot of it has to do with our own image. We're so concerned about how we are coming across to other people. And most of the time we're just going around holding our old image up and saying, no, I'm not like this, I'm this way, and how dare you, and this and that. And I was thinking, instead of saying that, like you were saying, you know, slowing down and stopping, you know, looking at the other person in the eye and saying, oh, I see you. And that's all we need to do sometimes. It's that simple. You know? And, but this has always perplexed me. I went to a Greek friend's festival, and they were sitting there and talking about, oh, you remember him, he passed away, and that person passed away, and what happened to this person, they're gone. And I was thinking, in my culture, it's the same thing. In your culture, it's the same thing. I went to Lee's brother's passing. We went through that last year, and it was also very similar. As human beings, we're so similar that we don't even, we think our differences are important, but our similarities are much greater than our differences. And we talk about the people who have left us, or it always sort of gets me that, you know, it's like, why can't we just sit down and talk to the person who's gone from our life? Before they leave, why do we have to wait till that person is gone that we have to, you know? It always gets me. It always has gotten me. You know? Yeah.
I think as much. Thank you, Umar.
Yeah.
As much as we can talk while people are alive, it's probably better.
Yeah. It's important. Yeah.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Megan.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I appreciated your sharing that, because it's a personal thing, and it's just I appreciate that you're sharing part of your life with us.
Thank you. Very good. Carolina?
Yeah. Les taught me that when somebody dies, you say good things about them.
Yes, of course.
That's right.
Of course. Yeah. Really see this. My friend was an incredible teacher. He was a head of the math department at Pali for many years. And he taught many, many children. Les?
We should say nice things about each other even before we die.
Yes. Definitely. Thank you.
Philip.
I wanted to follow up on what Dennis was saying about the juxtaposition of not being where the bombs are falling. And just when you started talking with the this international crisis that we all are aware of, I was not feeling that that separation, but rather not a sense of panic, but a sense of disorientation, feeling disoriented, or the potential for feeling disoriented and out of control. And I felt like you were addressing that in the framework of losing someone close, and I was struck that I didn't feel this sense of separation, maybe because even though we don't think it's likely, if this actually did continue to escalate, that none of us are really separate from those possibilities. But just in the context of your talk, I was just struck how so much of the time I'm focused on controlling, on trying to, or feeling like I'm in control, and or having plans, and that made me feel like I need to spend more time with this, as you were saying, the part that's not in control, that doesn't know anything or very much. So thanks again. And I appreciate Dennis bringing that up.
Yes.
Because it is important too that we not panic or not make things worse than they already are.
Right. Yeah. We need both. You know, we need also to exercise competence in our daily lives, and we need to also let go and just see things for as they are, right? Both are okay. David?
Thank you, Brenda, for your talk and your sharing. And the discussion of what's happening in my living room and what's happening with the bombs brought to my mind the subject of refuge. And some of my friends are participating in the, I think it's still going on, or maybe it just ended, at San Francisco Zen Center. They had a week-long study on refuge. A couple of my friends are in it. And that's very much the case. If you're out in the real world, you have to deal with the TV and the news and the anxiety and the stock market, and all of that's related to bomb dropping and people dying. And then we come back to refuge in our practice, in our there's kind of a physical refuge, but there's also the spiritual refuge as well that we come back to in practice that helps reinforce us for the next day's travails. I've always loved I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. Those little verses have always meant a lot to me. Thank you.
Thank you. I think all we can do is practice peace and embody peace in ourselves and hope that a little bit of that will spill over into the outer world. This is a powerful practice though. Very powerful practice. May.
I'm curious, Brenda, do you really feel your friend is gone?
It's interesting. It's a great question. I still have a message from him on my phone, which I haven't erased. just hearing the sound of his voice. Very, very touching. Yes and no, I guess would be the answer to that. Yes and no. There's a lot of him left, and he has influenced many people. Including me. It's so wonderful to see his attitudes embodied in his daughter, who is really funny. I mean, there were some funny things that she said, and I'm like, man, you are so your father. So I think, he lives on. He lives on. He lives on in us. Wow. I don't know about life after death. I believe there's something there. Something happens. I think we exist on more planes than just the physical, is my personal opinion. But do I have any scientific proof of that? Very limited, only from some stories that have been described. So it's hard to know, but the Buddha didn't answer. So who am I to answer?
Karina, you have such a beautiful message.
Wait a minute, I sent a message to Philip.
Oh, that's such a beautiful that's such a great heartfelt discussion. Thank you, everyone.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's KANNONDO.ORG.